My name is Barb Seaman, and this is a little show I call Connecting and Coping. We're several weeks into the COVID pandemic, and there isn't anybody who's not affected in some way. How do we deal with the uncertainty, the isolation? What new situations do we find ourselves in? Maybe it'll help to connect and have a conversation about how things are changing and how we're adapting. I recently spoke with middle school teacher Scott Rainey about what it's like to be teaching and coping during this unusual time. Rainey teaches U.S. history at Jemtegard Middle School in Washougal. He's animated and passionate, and rather than just memorizing dates and events, he uses the lessons from our history to fire up the students' critical thinking skills. A few weeks after the governor closed the schools and sent everyone home to work, we connected over the internet for a chat. We started by talking about how he reacted as the COVID pandemic began to take hold and disrupt our lives.
Well, you know, I think it was a lot like everybody else. I think that I was just kind of wrapped up in life, just doing life as it was. The start of the new calendar year in teaching eighth grade is always an exciting time, because I've always told people that one of the joys of teaching eighth grade is seeing the rapid growth and maturation of the kids over a very short period of time. And this year was no different from any other. Before the winter break, Christmas holidays and whatever, from September to December, there was really a lot of kind of shaking out the bugs and figuring out that, okay, look, you're getting ready to go to high school next year. You've got to kind of get your act together. And it's sort of releasing the little kid thing. And then coming back after that break in January, there is always, and it was this year was the same as every year, such a massive growth in improvement, I guess, in attitude and behavior and effort and focus. And so it was just me gearing up into increasing the academic rigor for my kids to try to help them become better students. I actually had, at the start of the year, I had introduced a whole new method of approaching the reliability of sources for them. I think that, I couched it in the idea that I said, look, we live in an amazing age where every one of us has in our pockets the collected knowledge of all of mankind accessible in your pocket. I mean, it's really, that's it. When I was your age, I would have to go to the library if I wanted to find out something. Today, I can just look it up on my phone. I said, but of course, the negative side of that too is that there's an awful lot of bad information out there as well. So we went through, I actually used the kids as a resource. So we went through and I actually had them develop the criteria for what reliable sources are. And we had created a set of criteria, and so we were in the process of developing that and implementing that in our study of different things as we're sort of moving along. We'd actually just hit the early 19th century. We were just about to start looking at the War of 1812 and examining the Star Spangled Banner and those sorts of things when all of this hit.
So you spent a good part of the year developing this criteria so that the kids would be able to sort of analyze information that's coming to them, either from the history books or from, say, like the news media or social media.
Correct.
How have you seen them handling the events of the last couple of months with the pandemic taking over our lives?
Well, it was very interesting because I have noted a definite shift, I suppose, in the approach to this. And I remember at the beginning, when my kids came, they had to come pick up their iPads in my classroom. there were kids who were really excited about it. They saw it as sort of a 6-week vacation. Like, woo, this is awesome. Yeah, we get 6 weeks off. And I'm like, dude, no. I mean, one child in particular I'm really close with was very excited about the time off. I said, hey, buddy, look, man, this isn't something to cheer about. This isn't a vacation, okay? This is bad news, okay? We need to take this seriously.
Tell me this. How do you teach history from a distance? How have you shifted your teaching style?
Well, that is a moving target, and that's a good question. Because all of us across the country, we're all having to reevaluate what that really looks like. For the moment, I am just been in the process of digitizing many of my assignments and putting them in a format where I can put them on Google Classroom and have work that kids can do. But like I said, this is a moving target and things are changing. So I am actually right now formulating the idea of creating maybe like little 15-minute lessons little short films that I can upload to Google Classroom for the kids to maybe explain where we're going, explain what's happening. It's probably an overused term right now, but it is definitely a challenge because so much of real teaching is the direct contact. I've always considered teaching to be like a performance art, and anyone who's ever been on stage knows that half of your energy comes from the audience reactions, and you adjust your performance based on how the audience is responding. And that's very, very true in a classroom as well. I mean, I after 20 something years now, I've learned to gauge where my kids are. If I see them kind of checking out, I realize I need to shift gears. I need to begin to do something that's going to get them a little more, say, physically active. You know, say, okay, guys, let's do this type of activity where we can stand up and move around, or your talk to your partner and see what they think about this particular thing, and whatever it may be. And that is very difficult to do across a video chat. I've done one video meeting with my kids that was about 2 weeks ago, and it was interesting.
Was it a Zoom meeting where everybody logs on at the same time and you can see their picture?
Precisely, right. And I had only done a couple of Zoom meetings at that time anyway. I'd only done a couple as a staff member, and so I was still learning all of the controls and everything with it. And about 10 minutes into this session, which was really just sort of a check-in, just, hey, how you guys doing? You got any questions about the current assignment I'd given out? And I found that the kids who are most talkative in class were also very talkative on Zoom as well. I'll just say that when I found the mute all button, it really helped a great deal. Where I could just say, okay, everyone, let's be quiet. And it's a work in progress, but we're getting there. I mean, that's, you know, the middle name of any teacher is flexibility and inventiveness and being able to roll with the punches. And so we just, that's what we're doing across the country. I think all teachers, really around the world for that matter, teachers are all having to figure out this new normal. And that's just what we'll do. And that's what we are doing.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? How do you connect with your kids and sustain their interest?
I actually decided, I kind of broke the rules a little bit. I actually went forward with my curriculum rather than just doing some sort of practice type thing or whatever. I actually moved forward on our next item. And so I sent the kids links to a documentary about the War of 1812, just for background information. And then there was a worksheet that went along with it. It's really kind of a lower level, not a super challenging assignment, but this was really meant just to provide the background framework for our further study of the conflict and what went on there. You know, because a lot of a lot of what I do in class is, you know, I've got to give them the raw material of the background information of what we're talking about here, whether it be the Salem witch trials, or it's the American Revolution, or the Boston Massacre, or whatever it may be. There has to be a transference of that information in some form. And then when we all have the same common language and vocabulary to understand that, then we can go on and do the deeper analysis. Like, for example, this is then going to be leading on to an analysis of the Star Spangled Banner and what it means in American culture. And so I'm using videos from YouTube. Kids tend to really respond positively to being able to see and have multimedia presentations do help. We'll be looking at different renditions of the Star Spangled Banner to examine kind of how this has been viewed in our nation's history, how we have regarded this. And how the views of that have changed. Like, for example, one of the renditions we'll be using will be the famous Jimi Hendrix performance from the last morning of the Woodstock concert in 1969. And we'll talk about how that was viewed by many older Americans at the time as extremely disrespectful. And yet, with the passage of time of 50 plus years now, it's come to be regarded by many, and maybe not all people, but regarded by many people as one of the most amazing renditions of the national anthem ever created. Because of the way Jimmy was able to sonically create, you know, paint pictures with just the sound of that that Fender guitar, that Stratocaster, making the sounds of the bombs and the screams of the men, and you know, painting these sonic pictures.
Jimi Hendrix, Woodstock, 1969. We also heard a clip of comedian Roseanne Barr from a San Diego Padres game in 1990, and Whitney Houston from Super Bowl XXV in 1991. This is Connecting and Coping. I'm Barb Seaman, speaking with U.S. history teacher Scott Rainey. Hang on, we'll be right back for more after this quick little break. This is KXRW.
KXRW Radio would like to help spread the word about food availability in Clark County for people in need in this extraordinary time. If you need food, Clark County Food Bank's partners are located in 21 sites throughout Clark County. The complete list is updated daily. You can find it at clarkcountyfoodbank.org. Once you're there, click on the button that says Get Food During COVID-19. If you can't visit a distribution site, ask a friend or neighbor to go in your place. They'll be able to pick up a food box for you. If you or a friend can't make it, email info@clarkcountyfoodbank.org. They may be able to deliver food to your door in some situations. And finally, if you would like to help, go to clarkcountyfoodbank.org and click on the Donate button in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. Every dollar donated will help meet the food needs of our most vulnerable population. Thank you.
Did you know the 2020 census counts every living person in the United States? Wondering why they do that? It's because the census provides critical data that lawmakers, business owners, teachers, and many others use to provide daily services, products, and support for you and your community. Every year, billions of dollars in federal funding go to hospitals, fire departments, schools, roads, eligible nonprofits, and other resources based on the census data. In mid-March, homes across the country will begin receiving invitations to complete the 2020 census. To learn more on the importance of making sure everyone is counted and for 2020 census job opportunities, find more information at 2020census.gov. That's 2020census.gov.
The COVID crisis has created a critical shortage of personal protection masks. Now that the Center for Disease Control has recommended that everyone should wear masks, the need is even more urgent. The Columbia Springs Repair Clark County program has instructions on how to sew and where to share personal protection masks. You can find Repair Clark County on Facebook or go to columbiasprings.org/repair. That's columbiasprings.org/repair.
Connecting and Coping on KXRW. I'm Barb Seaman, speaking with middle school history teacher Scott Rainey about how life has changed since the COVID-19 pandemic, shelter-in-place orders, and school shutdown. Before the break, we were chatting about how Mr. Rainey has adapted to teaching over the internet.
One last question here on this topic. Do you have any suggestions for people that could help them adapt to this online world of learning?
That's a good question. Well, I think maybe the most important thing right now, and I got to say, every parent I've interacted with so far has been doing this to the fullest. I would say just be patient with us as teachers, as the educational establishment, as we are trying to figure all this out. I'll tell you the truth, being at home right now is the last place I want to be. I want to be back in my classroom. I want to be with my kids. I want to see what they're doing. I want to help them grow. And having to do it this way is a poor substitute for what I believe I've been called to do. But it's what I've got to do now. So I would say, recognize that there's going to be require a lot of flexibility. We're going to make a lot of mistakes. Because we're basically inventing this out of whole cloth. I mean, everything is new, but I think that most people recognize that because everybody is having to do that in their own lives. It's like, well, how do you go shopping? How do you use a gas pump? How do you walk outside? How do you get exercise? How do you do any of these things we used to do without even thinking?
Yeah, it's like a whole new exercise in just coping.
It is. It is that, yes.
Do you have any predictions? Are you optimistic?
I am optimistic by nature. I tend to view life through the lens that my dad really was the one who helped to establish my worldview about things. My father, his attitude was always, you got to keep moving forward. You got to keep moving forward. I mean, I tend to think that things are going to get better. Things are difficult, but life is cyclic. There are bad times, there are good times. There are just things that happen that you can't do anything about, and the only thing really you can do is alter your response to them. And I found responding by loving the people around you, responding by being someone who can encourage, responding by being a person that others can look to for hope, can really help get you through a difficult time. This is a very difficult time. There's no way around that. There's no positive way to spin this. I mean, this is tougher than anything any of us have ever faced. Yet, we will get through it. We will move forward. We will come out of this. We'll come out of it different. We'll come out of it scarred. There will be loss. There will be pain. But we will come out, if we choose to, we will come out better. We will come out more equipped. We'll come out wiser. We'll come out smarter.
So I get the feeling that your dad's influence is like one of your biggest go-tos when you find yourself in difficult situations in your life. Where else do you go to for reassurance or to find peace of mind?
As a Christian, of course, my faith is paramount as well, and I have recently been reminded of a story I read about 40 years ago, actually, when I was about 10 years old, or maybe even a little bit younger than that. And in this story, a younger man is speaking to an older man, and the younger man asks him what his favorite Bible verse was. And rather than going to the tried and true classics, John 3:16 or whatever, that sort of thing, the old man said, "Well, it's not a particular Bible verse, actually. It's a passage. It's a phrase that's in the Bible over and over again." And the young man said, "Well, what is that?" And the old man said, "Well, the phrase is, 'It came to pass.'" And all through the Bible, both the Old and New Testament, whenever something is being explained, and this is primarily in the old the King James Version because of the way of the language, but at any rate, any incident that comes about is always prefaced with the words, "And it came to pass." And it came to pass that the Israelites wandered in the desert for 40 years. And it came to pass there was a great famine. And it came to pass that there was an evil king or whatever. And the old man said to the younger man, "That phrase brings me more comfort than anything else, because it tells me that whatever we're facing does end." Good times aren't around forever. But at the same token, bad times aren't around forever either. That life, is constantly changing. Let's be real. Let's not sugarcoat things. Let's not pretend that things aren't bad. But let's also remember that they're not going to be bad forever, that things are going to swing back. This has really been, in a lot of ways for me, a massive reset personally. I guess my personal hashtag right now is keep moving. And that applies to everything. Keep moving physically, keep moving emotionally, keep moving spiritually, keep moving intellectually. Use this time to learn, use this time to exercise physically, use this time to improve your relationships with those around you. Use this time to do something constructive. Don't sit. When you rest, you rust.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Are there any songs that are like running through your head over and over in this time?
The Disney cartoon Phineas and Ferb, which is just a marvelously fun cartoon about these two boys, these two adolescent boys that get up to all kinds of shenanigans and do these amazing things. But anyway, my daughter mentioned that the theme song, which is very cute and perky and poppy, is done by this band called Bowling for Soup. And I believe the song is actually called "It's Gonna Be a Great Day." And I tell you, Barb, it is one of the most encouraging, exciting, happy, fun songs I have ever heard. The spirit of the song is all about, literally carpe diem, seize the moment, seize the day, and that one, at least for the last hour, I should say, I guess, has been really going through my head, and that I think is really going to become a theme song for this time for me, to make every day the best that you can.
There's 104 days of summer vacation till school comes along just to end it. So the annual problem for our generation is finding a good way to spend it. Like maybe building a rocket or fighting a mummy or climbing up the Eiffel Tower. Discovering something that doesn't exist.
or giving a monkey a shower. Surfing tidal waves, creating nanobots, or locating Frankenstein's brain. Finding a dodo bird, painting a continent, or driving our sister insane. This could possibly be the best day ever. And the forecast says that tomorrow will likely be a million and six times better. So make every minute count, jump in and seize the day. And let's make sure that in every single possible way, today is gonna be a great day. Crossing the tundra or building a roller coaster, skiing down a mountain of beans. Devising a system for remembering everything or synchronizing submarines. Racing chariots, taming tiger sharks, constructing a portal to Mars. Building a time machine, stretching a rubber tree, or wailing away on guitars.
Oh, man.
This could possibly be the best day ever. And the forecast says that tomorrow will likely be a million and six times better. So make every minute count, jump in and seize the day. And let's make sure that in every single possible way, today is gonna be a great day.
And I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes of all time. The quote is, "May you live every day of your life."
Nice.
Yeah. May you live every day of your life. And that is, to me, just a beautiful, beautiful sentiment. Don't squander your time. And that's one thing we all have a lot of right now is time. So let's not waste it.
Absolutely. Scott Rainey, thank you so much for taking all this time to talk to me. And
of course.
I so appreciate your perspective and your advice for your kids as well as the rest of us. And I wish you the best of luck.
Very good. Thank you, Barb. It's so great chatting with you.
Connecting and Coping. I'm Barb Seaman. I'm so grateful to KXRW for this opportunity to connect with my guests and with you. Thanks also to our big sister X-Ray FM for sharing their time and resources with us. We're an all-volunteer radio station, and we can't do programs like this without support from the community. If you'd like to learn more, check out the new KXRW website at kxrw.org. Thanks for listening. Take care.